This is Patrick Esmond White. You're listening to Canada Reimagined. This episode, Sea Change. In looking at ways to capture carbon and make Canada greener, I started with forests and farms. But we have an even more exciting option here in a country bounded by three oceans. Here's the problem. Everything we hear and read about the climate crisis says the same thing. Even if we cut fossil fuels tomorrow, there's already too much carbon in the atmosphere. It's too late to stop a catastrophe. I've talked about things we can do to help. Add it all up, and it's not nearly enough. Climate experts wonder if there's still anything we could do to reverse the trajectory. Anything. One idea is to disperse sulfur in clouds high in the sky. This would deflect sunlight back into space. Another idea is to shade the planet with a sort of umbrella far in space between Earth and the sun. Then there's a proposal to sprinkle iron dust in southern oceans. This would trigger massive plankton blooms. Every ton of iron added to the ocean could, in theory, remove 30,000 to 110,000 tons of carbon from the air. Unfortunately, it appears that very little carbon would actually end up trapped at the bottom of the ocean in the long run. Most of it just ends up where it started. But these ideas, sometimes called terraforming or geoengineering, are generally considered impractical at best, dangerous at worst. Now, if we could in fact remove massive amounts of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, this would make a big difference. Let me scan the ideas on how to do this. Carbon capture from the oil and gas industry is one idea. Alberta's big on it since it keeps the oil and gas industry going. The problem here, cost aside, is that the energy at best is carbon neutral and we're looking for carbon negative. New technologies can capture carbon gases and lock them up. They work. These are typically paid for in a cap and trade system, which places like California and Quebec have implemented. But because it's a trade-off, it's still carbon neutral, not negative. But how else would you pay for this except in a marketplace? Next, trees can suck carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. This is good and should be done. Yes, it's essential. But there's not nearly enough land on Earth where enough new trees could grow in time to truly make a difference. Governments promise to plant millions of trees. Corporations promise to do it if we buy their products. Most of this is greenwashing. In some warmer countries, mangroves are being planted alongside shorelines. They absorb amazing amounts of CO2. This, too, is well and good, but it's a pittance. We need to do much, much more. There is, happily, one totally wild idea that gives me hope, and it comes from an inventor named Brian von Herzen. The solution? Seaweed. Kelp. Von Herzen proposes something on a scale you can't imagine, and it's not super costly. Ocean kelp, seaweed, has captured carbon for eons. Kelp can grow incredibly quickly, up to 2 feet a day, much, much faster than trees. Unlike forests, kelp doesn't burn and re-emit the carbon. When kelp dies, it sinks to the bottom, trapping the carbon. And we can make all this happen even faster. The concept proposed by von Herzen and endorsed by some very top scientists is to create artificial kelp forests that cover millions of square kilometers. Kelp forests covering 1 or 2% of the world's oceans might suck in enough carbon to restore the climate. Consider, the planet has about 350 million square kilometers of ocean. 1% of this is an incredibly vast area. To make a difference, huge swaths of the ocean would need to be kelp farms, really huge. The plan is to install irrigation grids that float under the surface and to plant kelp on these grids. They'd be equipped with wave-powered pumps and pipes for water circulation. They'd move warm and cool water containing nutrients between the depths and the surface. Different types of kelp grow in different climates, but as I understand it, they thrive on cool, clear, moving water. That's why you need the pumps and pipes to get the cooler, deeper water up to the plants. Fully grown kelp would then be taken to the deepest ocean and sunk, capturing the carbon forever. Kelp farms large enough to make a climate difference would also have three potential income streams: carbon capture, harvested kelp, and fishing. For carbon capture, the revenue stream would come from cap and trade markets. This is a short-term revenue source that would be phased out when the fossil fuel industry dies off. Harvested kelp has a multitude of uses. There are many varieties of kelp with different potential uses. Kelp farmers would grow varieties that thrive in their location and which have the most revenue potential. There is today a market for kelp on both east and west coasts of Canada, so the seeds of a much larger industry already exist. One use is in agriculture, with kelp as a fertilizer. It can help regenerate farmland, something Irish farmers did for centuries in their rocky soil. Kelp can also be part of an animal diet. This is not new. Dried kelp can be used industrially as packing material. It can be made into a kind of styrofoam or a plastic. It can insulate houses. It could replace paper. It can be a biofuel. Some seaweed is edible and is eaten in Asia and elsewhere. It's a good source of iodine, vitamins, zinc and iron, and antioxidants. Kelp forests may also help fisheries. Kelp forests would be located in ocean deserts where fish stocks are depleted and ecosystems severely damaged. Certain fish love kelp forests. By growing kelp, new fisheries may emerge. There is, incidentally, a 5,000-mile-long patch of sargassum seaweed in the Atlantic heading to Florida. What, if anything, should be done is a good question. Millions of tons could be harvested and sunk in a cap-and-trade program that could be measured. In any case, marine scientists and fishery experts should guide the new industry and ensure that the kelp farms don't damage native fish stocks and ocean ecosystems. Ideally, kelp farms would in fact help regenerate traditional fisheries. To regulate the massive kelp grids, an international treaty would be needed. The diplomats who work on ocean treaties, however, have a very good record for getting agreement. But they have a long way to go. Meanwhile, Canada, like other coastal nations, totally controls its territorial waters. This extends 22 kilometers from shore. There's also a legal 200-mile exclusive economic zone on ocean borders, but it's weakly enforced. New agreements are essential to ocean protection and to regulate and protect floating farms in international waters. More than that, in decades ahead, we should expect floating cities with permanent populations. These will also need new international agreements. Okay, you're thinking, the old guy's been smoking too much weed, and I don't mean seaweed. But in fact, a British company called Seafield Solutions is already working on some of this. They plan to grow a kelp called sargassum, I mentioned it earlier, to harvest it and compress it into bales. These are then sunk to the bottom of the ocean. The company refers to these bales as carbon batteries because once they're sunk, the carbon that is trapped within them will remain at the bottom of the ocean and out of the atmosphere for thousands of years. Cap and trade. But there's another twist on this technology. Ocean drains. Hello, you say. The ocean has no drain. Actually, it has a number of them. The water does not go down the drain so much as the surface currents all come together in a swirl. There are a few major drains and others much smaller. You'll have heard about huge islands of discarded plastic floating in the middle of the ocean. All oceans have them. One such garbage patch in the Pacific is 1,600,000 square kilometers, about twice the size of Texas. It exists because it's stuck over an ocean drain, and all the garbage floats to it, swirls around, stays put. These drains may be ideal locations for a kelp farm or a floating city. They would stay put rather than drift with a current. Floating cities would house people who work the kelp or who could capture and recycle the waste plastic, thus cleaning the ocean. Ocean kelp farms may help in other ways, too. The land surface of Mother Earth needs time to recover and return to health. Oceanfront land is going to be hit hard as sea levels rise. By using vast areas of oceans for humans to settle and help in the regeneration, life on land and sea would benefit. As part of ocean regeneration, the world must abolish fishing fleets that scour and dredge the international waters with no regard for the ecosystems. dragnet fishing releases huge amounts of carbon dioxide that is otherwise sitting undisturbed, locked on the ocean floor. Dragnets should be banned outright and enforced globally. Yes, I'm talking about China and Russia in particular, but there's enough blame to go around, and I haven't even mentioned Japanese whalers. Oh, I just did. My optimistic view is that ocean regeneration has potential to encourage global cooperation. And in fact, it's already happening. Down the road, when war in Europe turns to diplomacy, we'll be looking for issues like this where we can re-engage in positive ways. Maritime nations like China and Russia should be encouraged to create kelp farms and to increase fish stocks close to their home. Developing nations should be helped to establish kelp farms as a way to reduce poverty and feed themselves. Many years ago, the oceans were teeming with life. European fishermen 5 centuries ago reported dropping baskets into the waters off the Grand Banks and pulling up baskets full of fish. Fishing communities thrived in the mouths of rivers all around the world. Oceans were connected to the land by those rivers, which provided spawning grounds for many migratory fish. Those days are long past. Still, the regeneration of the oceans and a return to free-running rivers must be a long-term goal. Canada is surrounded by oceans. Our opportunities are unlimited. Something as simple as kelp farming may help save the blue planet. It's a sea change we should welcome. You've been listening to Canada Reimagined. My thanks to Tom Platt for the theme music, Tom Evans for my artwork, and to Harbinger Media, a collection of Canadian independent podcasters that I'm honored to join. I'm Patrick Esmond White. Tune in again and spread the word.